This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Centered by Touris out of the stick of Wheeler, though. Wheeler at the empty net, and it went wide. Scheifele hustles to negate the icing. Scheifele at the empty net. Scores! What hustle by Mark Scheifele! And the Winnipeg Jets have stolen home ice advantage in this opening round of the playoffs. Two goals by Mark Scheifele. An unbelievable performance by Connor Hellebuck as he stops 47 of 48. And the Winnipeg Jets win this one by a score of 4-1.
Dennis Bayak with the call. He nails it, calling it an unbelievable performance by Connor Hellebuck. And it was the Jets victorious in Game 1 of their second round series against the Nashville Predators, a 4-1 victory last night in Music City, USA. The Jets steal home ice advantage on the back of a scintillating goaltending performance by the Jets' number one goaltender and the Vezina Trophy candidate, Connor Hellebuck.
Scintillating.
Scintillating.
Great word.
Thank you. I, you know, looked up in my thesaurus before the show started and thought I'd use that and really bring the show to a dramatic beginning today on this Saturday morning.
Scintillating, I think, is a word that doesn't get used enough.
Well, I'm going to start using it. Maybe see if I can use it every segment today. You know, really just say everything is scintillating. You know, like the baby on Seinfeld is breathtaking. You know, everything about this show is scintillating. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live on TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. We want to hear from you. You can also send us text messages. Standard messaging rates do apply. You can send those text messages to 129090. And the website, our website, that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, it was a long week since the Jets clinched last Friday night against the Minnesota Wild, but it finally came to fruition in Game 1 last night in Nashville, and I think everybody knew or everyone expected that the Predators would probably come out with a ton of energy and a little bit like a house on fire, and that's certainly what happened. And you thought, okay, can the Jets weather the storm? And can they keep their head above water as the Predators come at them in waves to begin the game? Well, the Predators came at the Jets in waves for almost the entire 60 minutes of the contest, and the Jets not only weathered it, but they were opportunistic about it, chasing Pekka Rinne with three goals. He didn't start the third period for the Predators, and the Jets end up holding on for that 4-1 victory. The goaltender, Connor Hellebuck, what can you say about his scintillating performance?
Yeah, he was the first, second, and third star of that game, boys. And when Brandon Tanev opens the scoring for the Jets, they were outshot 15-3 prior to that, right? And, you know, the shots were 20-4 after the first period, and Hellebuck was sensational. I thought that early penalty kill, you remember Nikolai Ehlers took that tripping penalty about 7 minutes into the game, Dave, and the Jets killed that penalty off. Hellebuck made some big saves. I thought the Jets really fed off of that. And when Scheifele made it 3-0, that was right after the Jets killed off a penalty. That was Wheeler's goalie interference penalty. There were two occasions in last night's game where the Jets really fed off of a strong penalty kill and some really timely saves from Connor Hellebuck and then responded with a goal. So, you know, Drew, you used the word opportunistic, and the Jets really were opportunistic. And obviously, guys, everybody's talking about Connor Hellebuck's 47 saves. Nashville Predators set a team record with 48 shots in a playoff game. But, you know,
shots in the first period they've ever had in a playoff game with the 20, like you mentioned.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you got to give Hellebuck all the credit. But, you know, a lot of those shots, especially later in the game, I mean, those were garbage time shots. And I'm not taking anything away from the Predators because they had some high quality scoring chances. I mean, Philip Forsberg hits the crossbar right before Mark Scheifele scores, right? Yeah. So, I mean, that could have been a 2-1 game instead of a 3-0 game.
And that's a shot that Forsberg scores on more often than not. He had the entire half of a net there, and you know he just rings it right off the iron. I mean, he's got the entire empty net to shoot at on the power play there and just happens to catch iron as opposed to catching mesh. And it was, you sort of felt at that point in time, it's one of those nights for the Predators.
Well, yeah, as he just talked about, I mean, hitting when Forsberg hit the post, or cross, I thought it was a post, but regardless.
Yeah, he hits iron.
Regardless of where he hit specifically, the reality was that they actually set it up perfectly. Mm-hmm. They set it up to him on a tee, and he just rang it off the bar. And the fact is that that's a huge momentum change. I mean, the fact is, think about it. That building would have exploded. It's 2-0, would have been 2-1, and changes the whole dynamic of the game. I'm not suggesting it changes the outcome of the game, but it changes the dynamic. And then, of course, Wheeler, who admitted after the game when he was asked about the penalty, and he talked about basically how he was, you know, stewing in his juices for, you know, the full 2 minutes because he didn't agree with it. He didn't think it was a goalie interference penalty. He came out with a bit of a burn in his saddle and was ready to make something happen. Now, again, it was a great shot by Mark Scheifele. One could question whether Pekka Rinne should have had it or not because it was a pretty clean look. But, again, that speaks to the play of Rinne more than it does to the shot of Scheifele.
Yeah, I agreed. I mean, I thought the Jets, you know, we'll talk about Pekka Rinne in this hour for sure, because I thought he was certainly an Achilles heel for the Nashville Predators last night. But I thought what the Jets did so well, yeah, they gave up a ton of shots. And as you mentioned, that a lot of the shots were from the outside, and a lot of them came late in the game when the Predators were basically throwing everything at the net in an attempt to make it a one-goal game. I thought what the Jets did very well and what Connor Hellebuck did very well is he took the first shot. Oftentimes there was no rebound. And if there was a rebound, the Jets were the first ones on that puck to clear it away.
Yeah, they controlled rebounds, and if you think about it, right, the first two goals the Jets scored were both off of rebounds.
Where the Predators and where Rinne doesn't make a clean save. You're absolutely, I mean.
Well, and Patrick Laine's shot hits him in the mask.
Yeah.
So the second goal, I mean, you know, Rinne's a little bit, you know, dazed or whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, Paul Stastny's right there to deposit the rebound. And the Jets' first goal, great individual effort from Brian Little, right? Mm-hmm. He almost does it all himself. And then Brandon Tanev, Johnny on the spot, he's right there. It's an easy tap in with an outstretched Rinne. But the point is, you know, Rinne was fighting the puck a little bit. I thought it was fairly clear that Hellebuck was the more confident goaltender last night.
No question about it. I mean, Hellebuck looked, I mean, they showed the video, and it's now probably a meme on the internet, you know, him staring down the camera prior to the game starting last night. And yeah, you can say, you know, you can't make a correlation necessarily that because he looked focused that then he played focused, because I'm sure he does that through every game, and there's some games where he's just not that good. But last night, that is a goaltender playing with the utmost confidence. He comes into the game on back-to-back shutouts against the Minnesota Wild. He comes in and he's, you know, stellar for the first 40 minutes, certainly. I mean, more than stellar. Stellar even understates it. And then what impressed me the most is the Predators get that goal, and it's a 3-1 game, and there's a ton of time left in that period, in the third period. And what does Hellebuck do? He's still the same goaltender. He doesn't change. The team doesn't panic in front of him. He makes a big pad save. That was probably the best save that he had. He makes a big blocker save. That was also very key in the third period there. But he's still the same goaltender, despite giving up that first goal in a long time. And the dam doesn't break. You always fear that when a goalie is stealing the game and a team is able to get a shot past him, is that going to then destroy his confidence and all of a sudden is going to come in waves? And it didn't come in waves at all. Hellebuck was the same brick wall he had been through the first 40 minutes of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he almost gets his third straight playoff shutout, right? And that's incredible to even think that a goaltender can register three shutouts in a row. I mean, we've seen Marc-Andre Fleury, he's got three shutouts in his first five games this year with the Vegas Golden Knights. But Hellebuck has been calm and cool under pressure, and a lot of the saves he's making are looking easy for him. And, you know, this is a very good Nashville Predators team, and I think at points in that game, Drew, they got frustrated.
Oh, wow.
Because they looked at the shot clock, and they had 30, 35, 40 shots, and they didn't have any goals up on the board.
Without a doubt. Here's Connor Hellebuck post-game last night talking about his performance and talking about the 20-4 shot advantage for the Predators in the first period.
20-4 are the shots in that first period. You guys have a 1-0 lead. Did you feel like a lot of them were quality shots, or were they just putting pucks from everywhere on you?
You know, I was making saves tonight, that's for sure. It's tough to really get into this one because it's a long series ahead of us, and I know they're a great team over there, and they're going to push back, so I don't want to overstep myself and say something I shouldn't. So, you know, we're really looking forward to this series. I don't want to feed them in any way, but they are good.
Is there a time when you kind of knew you'd have it tonight?
Well, I've been preparing the same way every single night, and you know, I feel good. I do the same things, and my body's right. I got great organization here behind me, and all their experience, I think it's just the preparation.
Some of your teammates say they can see it, I don't know, early when they can tell you're on. I don't know if you feel the same way. Or...
Well, I just love playoffs. I love the intensity. I love the game in front of me. It's awesome. It's a little different. It's, you know, intense is the right way to put it.
I'm not sure what was more impressive, Connor Hellebuck making saves against the Nashville Predators or blockering away the questions from the media post-game last night. He's calm, cool, and collected. And really, I mean, the Jets' goaltending right now, you knew Connor Hellebuck had a great regular season. But the playoffs are a different beast. And since that bad third game in Minnesota, he's been absolutely unflappable.
Yeah, he's allowed one goal in three games, Drew. And you mentioned calm, cool, and collected. And for me, it's confidence. It really is. And, you know, Connor Hellebuck mentioned that, you know, he loves the intense atmosphere that comes with these playoff games, Dave. But he's a confident goalie right now. And you can see it in the way he's moving in the net. I mean, there is no wasted energy when it comes to Hellebuck in the net. And he hasn't changed anything as far as his preparations go that we're aware of. He's been preparing like this all year. And we know how good he was during the regular season. And that's what he's doing. He's carrying it into the playoffs. And that was the big question mark going into the playoffs. You think about, you know, what was the Jets' Achilles heel potentially? And it was the lack of experience. And obviously that wasn't an issue in round one against Minnesota, and it hasn't been so far against the Nashville Predators, because Dave, the Predators have much more experience than the Jets do.
No, there's absolutely no question. And I suspect there's gonna be a lot of goalies heading out to BC to follow what Connor Hellebuck's been doing, because it seems to be working for the young goaltender. I think probably the only person happier than Connor Hellebuck right now is his agent. I suspect that's what I was thinking last night as he was making save after save. All I could think about was his agent going cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. But no, I mean, he's a, you know, we've seen his confidence grown. He was always confident when we would talk with him in the AHL with the Moose, and he's just continued to be the same person that he has been with the Jets. And his preparation has slightly changed in the sense that, you know, his game day routine is a little bit different this year. And I suspect that's probably something they discussed during the offseason in terms of managing rest, in terms of being, you know, fresh for games. So obviously there's little minor tweaks, but in terms of, like, as he said, do I think that he probably does that same thing? Yeah, probably does the same thing with the camera staring into it. Do I think that made any difference? Probably not. But, you know, at the same time, he's just playing a very smart, efficient game. And, you know, we're no goalie experts here. But from our perspective, you know, he's been the difference for the Jets.
That's a goaltender who's certainly in the zone. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Jets and the Predators. We'll look at the Jets' forward lines without Joel Armia. And I want to relay an interesting quote that Bob McKenzie said on the post-game show last night on TSN. It's not his quote. It's attributable to another head coach in the NHL, but I think it's a very interesting one. It says a lot about the Predators and maybe where the series goes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Also some room for Nikolai Ehlers down the right side to center, to the line and in. Ehlers on the right side, puts on the brakes to the front of the net for Stastny. Laine, rebound, score! Patrick Laine got stopped. Paul Stastny was not. He banged in a rebound, and the Winnipeg Jets have taken a 2-0 lead. Bufflin plays it ahead, and Wheeler takes the pass from Kyle Connor. Wheeler to the line, drops, Scheifele scores! Mark Scheifele off the rush on the drop pass from Blake Wheeler, and the Winnipeg Jets have taken a 3-0 lead.
The Jets scoring three goals on their first 16 shots through the first 40 minutes of the game, more than enough to secure the victory 4-1. They had the empty net goal late in the game. Mark Scheifele gets his second of the game, is sixth of the playoffs with that empty netter. You know, what jumped out to me, and you know, I was watching TSN last night for the post-game coverage, and the Jets certainly didn't have a lot of zone time against the Nashville Predators. The ice was definitely tilted in the direction of the Predators being in the Jets' offensive zone. But when the Jets were able to get the puck and get some speed, they had very easy zone entries last night against the Nashville Predators. And they really did a great job last night on TSN highlighting that. Jeff O'Neill talked about how the Predators' defense were backing off at the blue line against the Jets' forwards and their speed, so that, you know, on that goal by Paul Stastny, Nikolaj Ehlers. I mean, he gets that head of speed from inside his own zone. Clearly gets the zone easily. Nobody in his way to get the zone. On Scheifele's...
Well, they were in his way. He just was too fast.
Fair enough. But at the blue line, there was nobody like angling him off into the corner or anything. On Scheifele's first goal, same thing. Wheeler is able to gain the zone easily right through the Predators' defense, and nobody's there to stand him up at the blue line, which he's able then to tee it up for Scheifele, who whips it past Pekka Rinne. Here's an interesting quote from last night's post-game show from Bob McKenzie. So this isn't McKenzie's quote. He's quoting an anonymous NHL coach that he spoke with prior to the series. He said, when the Predators' defense does not have the puck in their own zone, they are overrated. When they get the puck, they are the most dangerous. When they don't have the puck, too many easy entries, too much standing around. Really interesting perspective from another NHL head coach about that Predators' defense, in that maybe they're not. This isn't a great matchup for them, given the speed the Jets have, and the Predators maybe not being able to defend as well as the perception may be entering the series.
Well, the Predators got points in four of the five games against the Jets, and whoever this coach is he in the playoffs right now?
He's not in the playoffs right now. Well, so you're saying that he doesn't know what he's talking about?
Well, I mean, the Predators were the President's Trophy champions, right? They have the best top four. I don't think anybody here is going to argue with that top four of Roman Josi, PK Subban, Matthias Ekholm, and Ryan Ellis, right?
Well, maybe...
Is anybody going to argue there's a better top four in the league?
I wouldn't make that argument. I think they're the best top four, but they may have some shortcomings on the defensive side, and maybe those shortcomings are that they are too passive when it comes to standing up against an opposing rush at their own blue line.
You know, it's possible that on several occasions that happened yesterday, but I don't agree with this quote, and obviously I'm not an NHL head coach, but, I mean, what are we talking about here? You're talking about the best team in the NHL. You're talking about the best top four in the league. You're talking about the Vezina Trophy favorite right now. And you're going to say they're not a very good defensive team?
Well, no, he's saying that their top four defense on the defensive side of the game is overrated. It's not my quote. It's the quote that I just found it to be an interesting quote, and maybe the guy who makes the quote, and it's an anonymous quote, so we don't know who it is, but he's an anonymous NHL head coach. So, I mean, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt in that.
I think there might be a little jealousy in that quote.
Okay, that's very reasonable. I just thought it was an interesting one, and that the Predators last night, and I bet you this is something they try and clean up for Game 2, is that the gap, and we hear so much about Paul Maurice talking about the gap, and the players talking about having a good gap, and it's almost gotten to the point where it's a cliche, but last night the Jets were able to exploit a bad gap, I would suggest, from the Nashville Predators.
They were also badly outshot in that game.
I know. I'm not saying the Jets were the better of the two teams. I'm saying the Jets were opportunistic, and perhaps they were opportunistic because of the manner in which the Predators played defense at their own blue line.
The key to a series is how you adjust, and that to me is which makes a good coach versus an average coach, because an average coach with a good team can get fairly far, whereas a good coach with a good team will adjust accordingly based on how the games go, and his roster will look different. So my suspicion is that Laviolette will have made the adjustments for Game 2, and you probably won't see the same thing. I'm always a little hesitant to trust something like that, because, you know, like, you don't know what the politics are behind that quote, right? You don't know if he's got, maybe someone who doesn't like Laviolette, maybe someone who doesn't like the Predators. So, I mean, it's always take that with a grain of salt. I'm not suggesting, I'm with Ez, like, you're inclined to look at a team that's done as well as Nashville has done all season long, and then to start, you know, critiquing them in that manner and saying they're, you know, what was the exact quote? They're
overrated on the defensive side of the game in their own zone.
And Drew, you mentioned it yourself. I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers is one of the fastest players in the league. The only player that's maybe faster than him is Connor McDavid. So Nikolaj Ehlers has made a lot of defensemen around the NHL look slower or look like they're giving him too much room, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, the Jets are a great team. The Jets are a very fast team. And I think they have exploited some openings in the Nashville defense, but to say that this Nashville defense is overrated, I think is ridiculous.
Again, not my quote.
No, I know. I know. It's not.
I just found it to be, I thought it was an interesting to hear in the post game that this is at least the perception of one NHL head coach out there.
Chicago wins the Cup in 2015, and then a couple of years later, everybody's saying that Chicago's defense is overrated. They're washed up. Duncan Keith, still a hell of a defenseman. Is Brent Seabrook maybe not as good as he once was? Sure. But, you know, it's like everybody's talking about how good their top four is, and then a year later, you know, they're overrated.
That's shift our focus to the Jets forward lines last night. Joel Armia, we weren't sure if he was going to play or not. Obviously, he didn't for the Jets. The Jets chose to move Brian Little to the right wing alongside Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev. That line obviously capitalized, scoring the first goal for the Jets, Tanev getting that goal. What did you think of that line? So did the Jets' third line last night. They actually played more time during the game than the second line of Stasny, Ehlers, and Laine. So what did you think of the performance of Little, Lowry, and Tanev, and your thoughts about Little as a right winger?
Yeah, before the game, I was kind of curious to see how that line was going to perform because, it's a bit of a hodgepodge if you think about it. You mentioned Brian Little's on the wing, and I thought the line was good, and I think it was evidenced on the first goal that was scored by Brandon Tanev. And, you look at Brian Little, and we know that he's fighting some injuries, and he's had, some difficulties in the faceoff circle. But, that line I didn't think was as noticeable as the game progressed, and Hendricks, Kopp, and Roslovic, I thought, to me, they were pretty impressive at points in that game. But, you look at the Jets lineup right now without Joel Armia, and, I think he'd prefer to have Adam Lowry as that fourth line center with Brandon Tanev and Andrew Kopp. And then, Matt Hendricks, unfortunately, would probably be the 13th forward. But I actually thought the bottom two lines were fairly solid. I don't think they probably had as many offensive opportunities as they would like. But certainly, Tanev, Lowry, and Little combined to score the Jets' first goal. But, I think those lines right now for Paul Maurice are definitely subject to change.
Well, and the other thing that was interesting to me pregame was the fact that Marco Dano was taking the warm-up skate because, that's not often. I mean, if you know who your 12 forwards are going to be, you don't necessarily need the 13th guy. Sometimes you do it. Sometimes a coach will do it to keep a guy engaged in the game and make him feel a part of the team. But to me, that means maybe someone's still having something that's a little bit nagging. And, he was maybe a consideration to be popped into the lineup. Ultimately, they went with who they went, but those are the lines they used on Tuesday when they were practicing, so I wasn't surprised that they went with that configuration. And, it didn't jump out at me, wasn't spectacular, and the reality is they didn't possess the puck the way we're used to seeing the Jets possess the puck. So, perhaps that gets tweaked if Joel Armia ever comes back, but, with the cone of silence being what it is around Paul Maurice and injuries, The reality is you're not going to know if someone's healthy until, like we saw with Matthew Perreault, again, not healthy, wearing a non-contact uniform. But the fact is, unless a guy's actually in the pregame warm-up taking line rushes, that's when the game time decision would come off, and you can assume that he's in the lineup. But other than that, guys like Joel, and that's the thing, right? We've had so many question marks. Like even yesterday, going into the game, is Steve Mason going to be okay, or is it going to be Michael Hutchinson?
Yeah,
I was inclined to believe with Steve Mason practicing, it was going to be Mason. And of course, lo and behold, it ends up being Steve Mason. But again, there's that uncertainty as to who was going to be the backup. And again, Joel Armia, Matthew Perreault, guys like that. We have Dmitry Kulikov who still, hasn't been seen for a while. And so there's still the uncertainty with respect to the injuries.
Yeah, Paul Maurice in the post game was asked about that Little Lowry on the same line or Little moving to the wing. He said he likes having both a left and a right-handed centerman to take faceoffs on that line, and it's been playing a bit of a shutdown role. Is the quote that Paul Maurice used, or the line that Paul Maurice used in regards to Brian Little and Adam Lowry. The Jets were absolutely dominated in the faceoff circle last night, something to probably keep an eye on throughout the rest of the series. The Jets only won 34% of the faceoffs last night, the Predators winning 66%, conversely, as a result. Is that a area of concern, something the Jets are going to be looking at film out today, maybe during the practice later this afternoon? That's an area they have to try and clean up, is try and get those numbers closer to 50-50 at least?
Yeah, they definitely have to be better. And, back to the forward lines, I was thinking that, there was a chance that they might put Kopp on the wing on that third line. And then, you might have Lowry, Kopp, and Tanev, and then you might have Little centering, on the wing, and then you have a bit of an offensive fourth line. It's really difficult. There's something about these forward lines that just don't sit right with me. The bottom six.
Really? Go on. Can you expand on that?
I just don't think they produced offensively at all in the game, aside from the one goal.
You're saying just sort of for lack of a better word, a fluky rush and a fluky goal, but other than that...
I wouldn't even say it was a fluky goal. I mean, Brian Little does great individual work there that leads to the Tanev goal. I'm just saying, Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp has been your shutdown line all year.
Right.
And now you've got Brian Little on the wing on that line. Andrew Kopp has played center for the Jets for the last several years. And I thought Roslovic actually was using his speed really effectively and had some good zone time. But, Hendricks, Kopp, and Roslovic, to me, a bit of a hodgepodge of a line there. So I'm just saying, going forward in the series, the Jets won the first game, but I think... I wouldn't be surprised if Paul Maurice tinkers with those bottom two lines. The top two lines are staying the same. I just wouldn't be surprised if maybe you see Kopp reunited with Lowry and Tanev, or just something I think can be changed there, because I just didn't think they were good enough last night in creating enough offense. And obviously, you know, one of the lines is your shutdown line, and I realize people are probably listening saying, well, they did get a goal. But aside from that goal, I just didn't think they did enough.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Nashville Predators broadcaster Chris Mason, talk about the Preds and the Jets from the Nashville perspective. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit Linden Market Dental Center. com. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Nashville Predators broadcaster, analyst, Chris Mason. Chris, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Chris obviously brought you on to talk about the series between the Jets and the Predators in last night's Game 1. As a former player, take us into the dressing room, what it's like after that game where it's a complete one-sided affair. The Predators certainly dominated, 98% of that game, everything but the scoreboard. So what's it like in that Predators dressing room after a game like that where the better team doesn't get the result that they would quote-unquote deserve?
Well, I think, as a group, I think they have to be happy with a lot of things. I thought... an issue that really plagued them in the first series was discipline. They took a lot of penalties. They didn't take any last night. That was positive. They dominated the stat sheet, like you said. There's a lot to be happy about, but at the end of the day, it's the end result of the game that matters in playoffs. And I think, moving forward, if you can continue, if they feel they can continue to play like that, they're going to like the outcome. But having said that, I thought Winnipeg did a really good job of taking care of the front of the net. Connor Hellebuyck was great. I just didn't think they, considering the shot total and the shot attempts and everything, I just didn't think they got that many grade A opportunities. So if I'm Nashville, that's the one thing I would look at, it just being more hungry around the net. I thought, Winnipeg did play a good road game. They were never really in danger. They weathered that storm. They were able to get that first goal, which was big. And I just didn't think that, the Predators necessarily put him in any imminent danger around that net. So if I'm Nashville, that's probably the message moving forward. That's an area they can definitely improve upon.
Chris, Pekka Rinne really well. You're a former teammate of his. You cover the Nashville Predators. What did you think of his game last night? Not just the three goals. And what did you think of Coach Laviolette's decision to pull him and bring in Juuse Saros in the third period?
Those are tough games to play for goaltenders. I think any goalie will tell you, I'd rather, play the game or have the game that Connor Hellebuyck got, where he got consistent work. Like I said, for the most part, I thought the Jets did a great job of letting him see pucks and really pressuring the Predators on rebounds. So the majority of the rebounds were on the ice, and Connor Hellebuck's had a great season, really positionally sound last night, and took care of the job, but I don't think that they really, really made the job as difficult as it should be. On the flip side of that, it's tough as a goaltender, and you're Pekka Rinne, and you're seeing the other goalie down there making save after save after save, and then, that first goal is kind of a broken play, and it goes right to Tanev there. I don't think the first two goals, you really had much of a chance. That third one, the Scheifele goal, that was a good shot, but as a goaltender, someone of Pekka Rinne's caliber, I'm sure that's one that he would have liked back, and maybe, Peter thought he didn't like the way it looked and wanted to change it up. Juuse Saros has been great all year, so he knows he's got an option there. So I don't know exactly what went into the decision, but he must have seen something he felt he needed to change.
Chris, how concerned should the Preds be with Austin Watson leaving the game and perhaps his status being unknown for Game 2?
Well, that's a big one. He was, arguably their best player, their most valuable player in the first round. He's really had a great season. He's such a complete player You know, he's always been great defensively. He really carved out a niche on the penalty kill and, you know, good two-way forward. And this year, his offense has really taken the next step. Like a lot of players, he had, you know, a lot of offensive success in his amateur career and, you know, even in Milwaukee in the minors. So that's a big loss. He plays a lot of hard minutes for the team, and he's been such a valuable player. So that'll be one that they're going to monitor closely. But having said that, everybody, you know, you lose valuable players all season long. In the playoffs, they went through it last year. They lost some big-time guys, and that's just something that teams have to deal with, and it's an opportunity for somebody else to step up.
Chris Mason is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chris is a Nashville Predators analyst. He joins us from Nashville, where the Jets have a 1-0 series lead on the Predators ahead of Game 2 tomorrow evening. Chris, you know, how important is the matchup of, let's say, the Jets' bottom six forwards against that third-pairing defense for the Predators of Matt Irwin and Alexei Yemelin? Is that one of the key matchups you're looking at this series?
Yeah, I think, you know, this series is, these teams, they're the two best in the Western Conference. That's, I think we can all agree, almost, you know, you argue that top two teams in the league, you know, based on points. But I think that there's so many key matchups, that, you know, they're all key. That's definitely one of them. I thought Emlyn and Irwin did a great job in the Colorado series. But if, you know, that's a matchup, I think, you know, obviously in Nashville, that's going to be the one for the Jets to try to go after, and maybe one that, you know, Paul Maurice will try to exploit when they have last change in Winnipeg. So I just, top to bottom, though, it's not like you're talking about two rookies out there. Both these guys are very capable of defending and getting the job done. And, but, you know, the bottom six for Winnipeg, you got two of the deepest teams in the NHL going toe-to-toe. So every single matchup, any way you cut it, of equal importance.
No, Chris, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but if you're the Predators leadership group, so you're talking about Roman Josi and you're talking about Ryan Ellis and, you know, Craig Smith, if you're that leadership group and your team badly outshot the Jets, but you lost the game, what's the message to the rest of the team, obviously knowing that you don't want to go down in this series 2-0 heading back to Winnipeg?
Well, I think, you know, with the Predators having that experience last year, I think they're comfortable in this situation in regard to not pressing the panic button. And, you know, everybody knows how emotional the playoffs are. You know, you feel sometimes like you lose a game and all of a sudden you lost the series, and or vice versa. You win the first game in Nashville and, you know, the series is over. But I think having gone through these situations last year and all season long, they've handled them really well. I think, you know, that speaks to the leadership and the mentality in the dressing room of being able to handle, you know, the adversity and have an understanding that just because you lost one game and, you know, at home and all those types of things that go into analyzing the whole outcome of the series after one game, I think they're comfortable with that, and they've responded in those situations. They did it last postseason. They did it in the first round. Now, if they lose the second game, it's a different story. But I think they're happy with a lot of the things they did in game one. They just know they need to be a little bit better.
You know, Chris, if Austin Watson isn't able to go, would you think it'd be Ryan Hartman or Scott Hartnell drawing in for him?
That's a tough one. I honestly don't know. Peter's used all the guys in the first round. He used Hartnell. I think Hartnell's net front presence and his touch around the net is something that I think against Winnipeg with their big defensive core is a guy that, given a couple of those opportunities that they had last game around the net, that's his forte. I think he could serve well. I think Hartman, he's also can be a valuable piece because he's fast, he's gritty, he's that agitator type of player that has a knack for getting under opposition team's skin and really, causing that, bringing that element into the game. So, you know, it's really tough. I honestly don't know which way Peter Laviolette's going to go lineup-wise. But either of those guys are experienced guys and good options. That's the thing with the Predators, the way they're built. They have a lot of depth, and the guys that are extra guys right now have a lot of NHL experience. So I think, either way they go, they can't go wrong.
Chris Mason is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Predators and the Jets. Game two of the series goes tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock in Nashville. Chris, is playoff experience overrated?
I don't think so. I think, you know, you see teams that have been there before. I think, you know, it's overrated until it starts, until you start getting into a situation, you know, where the pressure's on. Like, I feel, you know, for example, the Colorado series. I thought Colorado had a great series. They had nothing to lose. They're playing loose. But once it came to game six and the pressure really started to mount and, you know, the chips were on the table where this could have been a series had they won that and the Predators came out and really dominated that game. I think there's a lot to be said for the way that teams play in those pressure situations. You see Pittsburgh every year. You see, you know, Chicago back in their heyday. They were just able to handle the adversity, and when it mattered and when it counted, they were able to get it done. But having said that, you know, when you have a team that has had the season Winnipeg has, and they seem to have a very strong belief in their room, and they're off to a great start, and they're doing all the things they need to do. You look at Vegas. You know, they don't have, especially as a team, they have none together, and a lot of players that came from teams that don't have a lot. So I think, you know, it all depends on the situation in the series. If Winnipeg can get up like they did against Minnesota, you know, they had that one little hiccup, but they came back out and they scored four goals within 12 minutes of the game and was over before it started. So it can be. I just think certain situations, it's definitely something valuable that you can, you know, kind of recall and understand that, you know, because it may seem doom and gloom, and the emotional roller coaster, you're able to handle those situations a little bit better. But at the end of the day, you got to get the job done.
Now, Chris, last question for you here. You know, you talk about, you know, the experience and belief, and, you know, Mike Fisher is a player who's not necessarily going to find himself on the score sheet every night now, but is this the time of year when the experience of Mike Fisher, having gone through all of the playoff runs and all the regular seasons, is this when we really see how important it is to have a player like Mike Fisher in the lineup?
Yeah, I think for him, you know, he's obviously a lead by example. He's a guy in the room that, you know, he's always going to have that calm presence, and he's going to say the right thing. And it's just a sign of, you know, security in the room where, you know, when you think it's, you know, you get all emotional about everything, and he's the calming influence that says, guys, we've been here before. Everything's going to be okay. We know we got a good team here. We know what we got to do. And, you know, he's a bull out there, but he's one of those guys that players look to for guidance. So I think having a guy like that is invaluable. It gives you a good starting point and good perspective on the game and in the series.
Chris Mason is a Nashville Predators analyst. He joins us from Nashville ahead of game two between the Jets and the Predators. Chris, thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Can't wait for the rest of the series. It's going to be good.
It'll be a great one. Thanks again, Chris. When we come back, much more on the Jets and the Predators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Little to the line, carries in on the right side. Little gets spun around by Emelin, keeps on going. Little to the front of it, scores! Brandon Tanev, after some good work by Brian Little. And Brandon Tanev taps it in for his second NHL playoff goal. And the Jets have the 1-0 lead.
Brandon Tanev opened the scoring last night for the Jets. They end up with the 4-1 victory over the Nashville Predators. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got their big screen TVs. They've got great food and drink specials. They've got full audio. The place to catch the game is Bernstein's Deli. Hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Brandon Tanev opening the scoring last night for the Jets. A goal by the Jets' third line, or the, one of the bottom two lines at the very least. And against, who was on the ice for the Predators, was the Alexei Emelin and Matt Irwin combination, which is what a lot of people are looking at as one of the key matchups of this series. Can the Jets exploit the bottom pairing of the Predators, which is certainly, I mean, it's not a terrible bottom pairing, but it's not as good, certainly, as their top four. So that's one of the key matchups. What are your other key matchups? As yours, how do you see that key matchup playing out over the remainder of this series?
It's definitely a key matchup, Drew. I mean, for me, you know, the Scheifele line going up against the pairing of Matthias Ekholm and PK Subban, that has to be one of the key matchups. And, you know, I think Matthias Ekholm and PK Subban, that has to be, you know, if not the best pairing in the NHL, it's got to be one of the best pairings.
Sure.
And, you know, I thought Scheifele's line was the Jets' best line. And, you know, I realized that Stastny's line contributed and Lowry's line contributed, but I thought for big parts of that game, the Jets didn't create enough offensively. But getting back to the matchups, I mean, I think when you look at a series, and, you know, matchups are key, obviously, this time of year. You know, Roman Josi's pair, Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis up against Stastny's line, obviously, with Lion of Ehlers, that's going to be a key pair. But really, you have to get scoring this time of year from all of your lines. And that goes back to what we were talking about before we had Chris Mason on. I look at those two lines right now for the Jets, the third and fourth line, and I don't know if they're going to get enough offense the way they're currently constructed. And again, you know, this is just me, because I realized Brandon Tanev scored yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I thought for the most part, I mean, we all watched the game. I mean, they didn't direct enough shots on net. I didn't think they had enough zone time. I mean, the Scheifele-Connor-Wheeler line, Dave, clearly had the most zone time out of any Jets line. At least, I haven't checked the numbers, but I would imagine that line had the most zone time. At least, if you want to give it the eye test, for me, that was the best line for the Jets. So, I mean, that's going to be a key matchup. And, you know, you look at, you know, the third line for the Jets and the third line for the Predators. And, you know, Dave talked about it. I mean, Austin Watson was questionable going into game one. But that line of Austin Watson, Colton Sissons, I mean, that line was terrific. And Nick Bonino, sorry, the center on that line. That third line was terrific for the Predators. And, you know, if the Jets are going to win the series, most likely they are going to be getting contributions from the third and fourth lines, right? So, I mean, there are a lot of key matchups. I mean, you know, we talked about it earlier. I mean, basically, you know, Pekka Rinne, if he's unable to outplay Connor Hellebuyck, this series could be over, guys, in less than six games. I mean, the way things are going right now, you know, Connor Hellebuck's allowed one goal in his last three playoff games. So, I mean, the goaltending matchup is key. But absolutely, Drew. I mean, Alexei Emelin, you know, he's a good defenseman. Matt Irwin's a good, solid defenseman. I think that's probably one of the better third pairs in the league. And then, you know, if you want to look at it from the flip side, Morrissey and Trouba are going to be out there, I imagine, for the whole series against the top line of the Nashville Predators, right?
You would think so. They're the shutdown defense.
Victor Arvidsson, Philip Forsberg, and Ryan Johansson. So, I mean, that's going to be a key matchup as well. There are a lot of key matchups, and it's just because these teams are so evenly matched, really. I mean, I don't think, aside from, you know, the Predators having the better top four and the Jets having the better top six, the biggest advantage they probably have right now is Hellebuyck is outplaying Rinne.
Through one game. Dave, what are your thoughts on Peter Laviolette pulling Pekka Rinne last night to start the third period and going with Juuse Saros? Did you think that was a mercy pulling? Did you think that was deserved? Do you think that maybe is a sign that, you know, that, you know, that Laviolette might not have full confidence in Pekka Rinne right now?
I'm not yet ready to say that he doesn't have full confidence in his goaltender, who, you know, performed as well as he did all regular season long for this team. So I suspect that it was more of a mercy pull at that point. His team isn't, you know, having success, even though obviously they've possessed the puck throughout most of the game. And I think that, you know, sometimes coaches will do that. I mean, he didn't pull him during the game, didn't pull him after the Scheifele goal, which, to, again, was probably the questionable goal that he gave up in the game, because that was one, you know, he probably saw, and I thought he would have, he probably makes that save more often than not. So to me, that was, if you're going to pull him because you're not happy with performance, that's probably when you do it. But I suspect, I mean, even though it's the home crowd, you don't want to deflate the building, and sure, oftentimes that can just have the feeling of just throwing in the towel. We're going to try and save him for game two. So to me, you do it during the intermission. You go up to Pekka Rinne, you say, listen, you know, we're going to save, you know, we don't have it going. You come up with any sort of rationale or justification you need to kind of make your goalie feel good. Goalies are different animals, as we all know. So you do whatever you need to do to kind of assuage his ego a little. And then you essentially say, look, we're going to go with Saros, and the team got a bounce from it, right? You know, Fiala gets that goal. Mm-hmm. It was a nice bit of work. It was almost a tic-tac-toe goal. Not almost. It was a tic-tac-toe goal. By the Predators. So it gave them a little bit of life early in that third period. Then the Jets stifled it for the rest of the game, so that was good. But the fact is that it maybe did what they wanted to do, which is basically say, look, we're going to keep our number one goalie. He's been so good for us all season long. We're going to give him a rest for the remainder of the game. It's kind of a message to the team. A message to the goalie. He's got to be better. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, he let in a goal that he probably wants back, and it's a killer goal because it takes a 2-0 game and makes it a 3-0 game.
There's no doubt in my mind that Pekka-Rinne is starting game two. If he struggles again in game two, maybe Saros comes in again, and then we're having a different conversation, but I think there's zero chance that Saros starts game two.
I would agree with that, but I wonder if the leash is getting shorter for Pekka-Rinne. I mean, here's his numbers over his last 13 playoff games. So that goes back to this first round, last night's game, the first round against the Avalanche, and then the six games against the Pittsburgh Penguins last year in the Stanley Cup final. Save percentage of .895 and a goals against average of 2.80. I mean, those aren't Vezina Trophy numbers by any stretch. Those are bad numbers.
What were his numbers in the first three rounds before Pittsburgh?
I'd have to look it up real quick.
I just hesitate to bring numbers from last year without the totality of the numbers. I mean, to suggest, to just cherry pick his Stanley Cup finals and not to know the first three rounds that he went through, if his first three rounds were stellar, then it's hard to just be able to, then you're essentially cherry picking so you can kind of make that argument. To me, it's like if you have a full totality of what his numbers were from last playoffs and they weren't good, then you could say you have something. But I don't know. Because there's no continuity. First of all, it's a slightly different team. Second of all, there's no momentum between the Stanley Cup Finals and the first round of this year. So I just think it's a completely different animal.
I think this is give or take a couple games here. He was 12-4 with a .941 save percentage and a 1.7 goals against.
Sounds pretty good.
It certainly sounds pretty
good. So that's my point.
Seen that Pekka-Rinne, though, yet.
The last three games against Colorado, you're talking about, well, he got a shutout in the last game, and then he had a .926 save percentage, a .939 save percentage. So he was really good in the last three games. He wasn't very good in the first three games, especially games two and three. I mean, actually, game one, he had a .926, but game two, you're talking about an .867 save percentage, and then game three, a .733 save percentage, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he had a couple of bad games in the first round series, but then he was good in the later stages of that series. But, hey, Drew, I mean, he's had some bad games here the last couple of years in the playoffs, but, I mean, I don't think we can start talking about, you know, Laviolette losing confidence in him and, you know, him not starting games. He's their number one goalie. He's one of the best goalies in the league, if you ask me. And obviously he is because he was nominated for the Vezina Trophy.
Look, I don't think there's any question whatsoever that he starts game two, but I found it interesting watching some of the post game last night. Kelly Rudy, a guy who certainly knows goaltending and has been, he had a lengthy NHL career, thought that there were troubling signs when he watched Pekka-Rinne, you know, during the game, his body language on the bench, and in some of the other games in that first round. So I'm going to some extent, put some stock into what a guy like Kelly Rudy has to say, because he's not typically known for spouting off and for, you know, stirring up trouble where there usually isn't any.
Game two is going to be huge for not only the Predators, but Rinne, because he didn't have a good game in game one. I mean, I'm not going to fault Pekka-Rinne on all three goals. I thought on Scheifele's goal, maybe he was a little bit deep in his net.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it was a beautiful shot by Scheifele. I mean, the Jets are a great team. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, the Predators allowed goals to a bad team here. And two of the goals were rebounds. I mean, like the little goal, I mean, it was a rebound, a fortuitous bounce to Brandon Tanev. And then, you know, Patrick Laine's shot hits him and then it goes right to Stastny. I wouldn't say that it was his worst game ever, but he wasn't good.
No, he certainly wasn't. And that's just going back to sort of the key matchup when you have two teams that are so evenly matched, Dave, between the Predators and the Jets, that key matchup of Hellebuck versus Rinne, two Vezina Trophy nominees, that you wonder now, you know, do the Jets maybe have a more decisive edge than people were saying at the beginning of the series? I know it's only one game, but
Hellebuck keeps playing like this, Drew, then the Jets have a huge advantage. Because Hellebuck is playing at an elite level that I don't think any other goaltender right now, maybe with the exception of Marc-Andre Fleury, is playing at right now. And it's one game. I mean, Rinne was outplayed badly by Hellebuck in game one, But it's one game. We'll see what happens in game two and game three and so on.
The key to me, and I said it earlier in the show, but the key is how you adjust as a team. And that to me is how, and that goes for everything. That goes for the goaltending and that goes for the forwards. And maybe perhaps, you know, like Chris Mason said, that maybe the Predators should allow more shots on Rene so he can get into the game, give up the puck to the Jets a little bit more. But no, I really think like that adjustment will show you the difference because these are two very evenly matched teams. So some slight tweaks here or there are important. This is really where you show when you have two very evenly matched teams, where a coaching style change can necessarily help to, you know, give you that advantage you might need in the next game.
It'll be interesting to see what happens ahead of Game 2. That goes tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. When we come back, Michael Trakos, national hockey writer for Post Media, joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com. We're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend, Michael Trakos. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Great win last night. Good to talk to you guys after a win like that.
Yeah, we had a lot to do with it ourselves sitting here in Winnipeg.
I know. All those positive vibes you guys are sending all the way to Smashville.
That's right. And, you know, I was screaming shutout, you know, early in the third period, and that's what caused Nashville to score. You know, we have all the power in the world, as you well know.
Yeah, Mike, it's those intangibles.
That's exactly it.
What did you think of game one last night, Michael? I assume you caught a glimpse of it or two. What did you think of the heavyweight battle between the Jets and the Predators?
Well, if Connor Hellebuyck can play the way he did in game one and the way he closed out that Minnesota Wild Series, I think the Winnipeg Jets are going to be maybe not even going to the conference final. This is a Stanley Cup team. That's really... Well, we've talked about this, and you guys have probably talked to this to death over the last, 5 years, is goaltending has been the one issue with this team. And now that they've got a goalie in Hellebuyck, who is a Vezina Trophy finalist, I don't know if he's going to win, but he's playing like a Vezina Trophy winner right now. And that really is the missing ingredient, and that's the way you win a Stanley Cup. You look last year with Matt Murray, the year before with Murray. Basically, it's very, very hard. It's very hard to find a team that won the Stanley Cup without a goalie who's playing out of his head. And the way that Hellebuyck, like I said, is going up against Rene, what did he stop last night? Like 46 shots or something? It's ridiculous. So the Jets are probably going to clamp down and not allow as many opportunities on the back end. But when you've got a goaltender like that, it makes life a lot easier.
Mike, moving away from the Jets and you know, moving to the Toronto Maple Leafs, who obviously, you know, lost.
Do we have to?
No.
Sorry, Mike. You knew it was coming.
This is a contractual obligation to talk about the Leafs.
Absolutely. You know, you wrote about this past week about, you know, the Leafs' need for a top four defenseman. When you look at that Game 7 and, you know, the Leafs having that one goal lead in the third period and then it all falling apart, and you mentioned goaltending. I mean, Freddie Anderson was excellent in that first round series, and he was excellent all year. Is this the summer that Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello really need to trade for a top four defenseman?
Yeah, I think so. Like part of the, so you draft and develop players, and you know what, you take the best player in the draft. In a lot of cases for the Leafs, it's been a forward, whether it's Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and you know what, they hit on all three of those guys, and they've hit on a lot of other guys, whether it's trading for Kapanen or signing Zach Hyman or getting Connor Brown, I think in the fifth or seventh round. So you've got like a really basically overflowing with forward depth. Now it's time to maybe turn some of those forwards into an area of need, which is definitely on defense. And you know, like Nashville did a similar thing where they had so many defensemen, whether it was Ryan Suter, Shea Weber, Seth Jones, Ryan Ellis, and Matthias Ekholm, and Roman Josi, and basically they said to themselves, "Okay, listen, we've got arguably six number one defensemen here, but what we don't have is a number one center." So they flipped Seth Jones to Columbus for Ryan Johansson. And I think a similar move can be made in Toronto where you look at Carolina and they are really deep on defense. Maybe you can get a Noah Hanifin or someone of that ilk around the league even if it means giving up a William Nylander or a Connor Brown or a Kapanen. And you know, you look at the salary structure of Toronto, you're going to have to pay Nylander, Marner, and Matthews in the next 2 years. And really, do you want to lock up three guys really eating up a significant chunk of your cap space when you still have that big deficiency on defense? So it's all about balance. It's all about having not just great forwards, but having great defensemen and a great goaltender. And I think the way to do that is you really have to start kind of shuffling deck chairs around and trying to make a lot of these pieces sort of fit together.
You know, Michael, if I said to you, do we have an issue? And your response to me was, I don't think so. I would think that we may have an issue, but that's kind of the response that Mike Babcock and Austin Matthews had between in exchange. Do you think there's an actual problem there, or do you think this is just being blown up?
I think it's somewhere in between, guys. You know, it's funny. Like, I always hear this guy, Dave Schultz from the Globe and Mail, quote, tweeted out the other day that 364 days of the year, most people hated Scotty Bowman, but on the 365th day was when they picked up their Stanley Cup ring. So you liked them on that day. And I think there's part of the whole notion, like, do you have to like your head coach? And does the head coach have to be buddy-buddy with all the players? And you know what? Part of Mike Babcock's job is to try to get the best out of these guys. And you know what? When you lose in the first round, there are going to be disappointed faces, and there's going to be a lot of people not really happy with one another. So you know, there might be sort of an issue in terms of ice time, usage. Like Austin Matthews, you look at his power play numbers, they were terrible this year. And the reason they were terrible is because he didn't get a whole lot of power play time early in the season. And he wasn't really used as that kind of trigger man on the sidewall. So they got to find a way to make him happy in the sense that this is your best forward, best player, and he has to be on the ice more than probably that Mike Babcock was using him. So they've got to figure out that, and they sort of have to make him a little happier than he probably was this season.
Michael Tracos, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, you're the Washington Capitals. You have a 2-0 lead over the Pittsburgh Penguins. You're on home ice. Things are going swimmingly in Game 1. Lo and behold, of course, the Penguins end up winning 3-2. What's it going to take for another NHL team to slay the dragon that is the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Well, I don't want to say you got to take out Sidney Crosby, but basically you got to take out Sidney Crosby because this guy is just too darn good in the playoffs. Let's face it. Like, what almost tipped the scales in Washington's favor last year was Matt Niskanen driving a stick through Sidney Crosby's forehead, and even that didn't really slow down the Penguins. So you're missing Evgeny Malkin, and then Crosby is on the ice for three of the goals that you score in the final 15 minutes of the game. And now, the guy's just incredible at this time of year. And, you know, his play has really overshadowed the play of Matt Murray, who is also just playing out of his mind in that. This is the Matt Murray that we saw last year's playoffs. So, you know, the Penguins are still the team to beat in my mind, at least out of the East. And, you know, with every series that they win, with every game that they win, and every comeback that they come back from, this is a team that's just getting more confident and more sort of game ready for these playoff games.
Mike, do you think the Penguins can still beat the Capitals without Evgeny Malkin and Carl Hagelin? Or, you know, is it possible that they're going to miss those guys if they're not able to, you know, come back early on in the series?
It's all going to depend on Washington's second line. Like, the Backstrom line didn't do enough, in my mind, in that game one. And, you know, if you really kind of think that the Ovechkin line and the Crosby line are sort of going to cancel each other out, and that's the kind of thing that went missing in game one, was that Ovechkin had a really quality game, and you really can't complain with how he played. It's the fact that that second line didn't really do enough. And when you're missing Evgeny Malkin, that means that the Capitals really have to take advantage of what should have been an advantage in terms of the line matching. So I think that's going to be the key factor, is whether or not Washington has enough depth in their forward lines and whether Braden Holtby can sort of play how he was in the first two periods and not how he did in the final period.
Michael, the one series I suspect that not a lot of people are talking about is that Vegas-Sharks series. Is Vegas ever going to lose again? And like, it's just unbelievable what they've been able to do, five wins already in these playoffs.
They will never lose again.
Yeah, Marc-Andre Fleury is going to finish the playoffs 16-0 with 10 shutouts. It's really looking that way. Like, I thought the L.A. series was going to be that wake-up call for Vegas, and they really ground them out, and what they allow, like, three goals against the Kings in four games and shut them out twice. And then they go into San Jose, and it's like, okay, we're just going to put up a 7th spot here. It's like, what is happening? Like, I know Vegas did what they did in the regular season, but I'm still shaking my head as to how good this team is. And I'm looking up and down the lineup, and I'm going, okay, Shea Theodore wasn't good enough to be on the Ducks defense last year. Okay, William Karlsson was a third-line guy, not getting any power play minutes last year. How are these guys able to turn opportunity and ice time into a starring role for themselves? And it really is amazing, and it really kind of goes to show when people are complaining, hey, that fourth-line forward needs to get more minutes. Yeah, probably that fourth-line forward needs to get more minutes because he could end up being the next William Karlsson.
Michael Tracos, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. The final second-round playoff series gets underway this afternoon with Boston and Tampa meeting against each other. Sort of somewhat of a mirror image of the Jets and the Predators in that they're two of the best teams in the Eastern Conference playing in the second round as opposed to in a conference final. You know, what do you see as the sort of that'll be the difference maker in that series? Do you think that the fact the Bruins have to go 7 sort of emotional games against the Leafs is going to end up costing them when they face the Lightning in the second round?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Zdeno Chara looked real tired at the end of that first round series against the Leafs. He wasn't their best defenseman. He might not even have been their top three defensemen when all is said and done. So I question whether he's got enough in the tank. And the one guy that I was kind of really disappointed in was Charlie McAvoy. So, you know, maybe we haven't seen the best of the Bruins, and they can ratchet it up now that they had that first round scare. But I'm thinking this one's going to be Tampa Bay, maybe in a short 5 games, especially with the way that Rask was looking in the last couple games for the Bruins. Real shaky in that. So I really like Tampa's lineup. I think they really don't have any holes up front or back on the back end, and their depth is just incredible. So I'm taking Tampa Bay, and I just really question whether the Bruins really have enough to go another deep series here.
Michael Tracos is the national hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, appreciate your time this morning. We know you got to go pick up your kids, so make sure to say hi to them from Uncle Dave, Uncle Ezzy, and Uncle Drew.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Michael. Thanks again. Today. Yeah, take care, Michael. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.